comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble! It's Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Nerds United, and may I also say Merry Christmas to those of you who partake. Happy Hanukkah, if that's, you know, still today, if they're still, I don't know when Hanukkah is, I'm sorry. Merry Kwanzaa, let's cover all the bases. I think I've done it. Those are all the big ones, and a couple days.
We're in Asheville, we had solstice, so, yeah.
And I know we're a couple days late, but happy Festivus for the rest of you. So, you've heard his voice. He's perhaps the voice is not as recognizable as the co-host of the year, Michael Luther, but he's been on a number of times, and he is a long time co-conspirator probably might be the best word, but Anthony Mathenia, welcome back to Nerds United, buddy. How have you been?
I've been good. It's good to be back and sit down and talk, especially like now when I'm not trying to pimp some project or something like that.
Although the pimping was half the fun.
Yeah. So no, yeah. Merry Christmas to all. And yeah, excited to be back on the show. Thanks, Greg.
I almost thought you were going to say and to all a good night and then be like, that's it. That's the show, everybody.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, it's interesting that you chose that, you know, welcoming that greeting, as you mentioned, a lot of the times that you've been on in the past, it's been, hey, check out this project on Kickstarter. Hey, check this out. It's coming out, you know, on Kickstarter soon. Like you say pimping, I say selling or hawking. the background or the backbone of that, of, you know, how we got together in the first place was a group called Stash Publishing. And give the listeners a quick rundown again, just, you know, in case they're new or they've been living under a rock for a few years, just the beginning, the origin story, if you will, of Stash Publishing, how it came to be.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever given like the true origin story.
I'm not trying to cut you off, but I believe it involved a back room in a comic book store.
Right. So, yeah, that's the safe origin story of that.
Do tell. It was really a back room of a strip club. It's fine.
No, I was like, I guess I was reading The Invisibles by Grant Morrison at the time, and he used to have this letter comic or a letter column in the back of the comic that, you know, he'd talk about whatever he was into. So he, and one of those, he was talking about sigil magic, about how you like write out a desire and rearrange all the letters to make like some kind of magical looking sigil. And then you activate it and that's supposed to manifest, you know, whatever you wrote down. And so, yeah, I wrote down, I want to make comics. And I did the ritual, which I won't go into, but for those who are in the know will know exactly what I'm talking about, how you make this magic work. And it wasn't but like a week later that it popped up on my social media that a local comic book shop was starting a comic book creator club. So, yeah, I went to that, and a lot of us did, you know, pull there for whatever reason, and we got together making comics, basically learning how to make comics from the ground up. And then, yeah, we went on to make some books together and work with a lot of different people. We later chose the moniker of Stash. And, yeah, we did a lot of fun and cool and exciting things.
And again, without, you know, Stash Publishing, without, you know, this, you know, comic book shop, there's a lot of comics and things that I would not be familiar with. There's a lot of talented individuals that I wouldn't be, you know, familiar with. Just, you know, talking I'm dropping names here, folks, of people who have been on the show I'll stick with, for the time being, titles. There was Primus, which was once in a lifetime, but very unique conversation because, sure. And you were kind of the go-between, but that was with myself and the writer who was in, I want to say, Brazil.
Yeah, Alberto.
Right.
Pessoa.
Well, it was Brazil, right? I'm not crazy on
that?
Yeah. Okay. Gunpowder Witch with Jordan Williams. Mm-hmm. Most recently, Lost Owl Kingdom with our mutual friend Jason White, who's been on a couple of times now. And that's just, a few of them. But just because, I guess, give us the next chapter of Stash Publishing, because you broke news to me that not really even news anymore. But what happened? Let's go. Turn the calendar back about 12 or 18 months.
Yeah, I think for a lot of us, like, life just got in the way, and like you get involved in things like this, and it's because of a creative wish or dream that you have, and in our case, it was to make comic books, and then. That's all well and good, but then you start thinking of like, okay, how can we get those comic books out there? How can we reach that audience and things like that? And then, there's a certain business aspect that comes into it too, and it's always hard to kind of like strike that balance of that, especially when, that we all had individual lives going on. Things and a lot of stuff happening in life. And so it just came to the point where it just made sense to, I don't even want to say like shut down, but just like go on hiatus. And honestly, even though we've kind of like ceased to like be actively engaged in the publishing end of things, a lot of the projects that we had started under that banner still live on. And like you brought up Jason White with Lost Owl Kingdom. That was kind of like the first book that came out that we had started back then, that was still kind of like with that spirit going for it. And we have other works underway still. Confessions of a College Kingpin with Seth Ferrante, and yeah. Lucky comic book with Christian Cipollini. So those are still going strong. Then some of my own projects are still going on. So yeah, it's kind of like a bittersweet thing, like, to talk about here, but yeah.
All of, that you just said, when life gets in the way, and this is, if you're, let's face it, unless you're working for Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Image, there's a likelihood that all of this is strictly, labor of love, and that's fantastic. But unless you work in one of those aforementioned industries we mentioned, briefly, love don't pay the bills a whole lot, So, a lot of creators, indie comic, writers and artists, colorists, inkers, things like that, they have regular 9-to-5s, or that's 9-to-5 if they're lucky. A lot of them are graveyard shift or swing shift, things like that. So you find the time to do it when you can, in hopes that you can get the story told in the way that gets the story off your chest, doesn't betray the initial idea, I don't think, and you can see it come to fruition.
There's so much good that came out of that experience just for me on a personal level. One thing that I found in Stash was like this sense of community. And I think that, that was kind of like drew us all together. Yeah, we kind of bonded over making comics, but kind of the core group of us, it became, kind of like a surrogate family for a lot of us. And, when we weren't making comic books, we were dealing with things like, hospitalization of people and, life events, and not just the tragedies, but also like the successes, marriages and childbirth and things like that. And so it kind of really drew us together. And even though, like, now a lot of us, we're all geographically separated from when we all started in that back room of Heroic Adventures, but, you know, we still kind of maintain contact. And it's neat to see kind of, you know, what people are doing now. With Ryan Lawson, he's kind of moved on from comics to doing cosplay, and his costumes and stuff he comes up with are incredible. And Drew Rose, he's got his own podcast now talking about one of his other loves, wrestling. And you've had him on the show, so you know he's a natural behind a mic.
As long as you didn't say, you know, talking about one of his other loves, Ohio State.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a conversation. You just don't touch that.
Right, right.
Unless you're really ready to go all in.
Yeah.
And one of the cool things that I was glad to see Stash do, and, you know, it's kind of beyond, like, all the, you know, the great people we worked with. And, you know, we worked with a lot of talented people from all over the world, and, you know, people that have been published, you know, in some of the bigger names like Image, Marvel, DC, things like that. It was seeing Jordan Williams' Gunpowder Witch become a graphic novel. Because you want to talk about labor of love, I sat down there with him many, many times when he was huddled over that art board, you know, with his ink pens and stuff, making that happen, and to finally see it through and to have that published graphic novel, that's still one thing I'm personally looking forward to myself.
Well, I can't wait to talk with you off air then, because I can make another dream of yours come true. It's only taken me 2.5 years so far. But so let's talk. You know, you mentioned Lost Owl Kingdom being one of those, we'll call it in the PS era, the post-Stash era. But there's one that I've been following. I don't want to say lurking. I don't want to say following closely, but I've been, you know, tracking its progress, if you will. And that is a graphic novel based on the life of one of America's, you know, most famous authors that I think in 2019, you know, kind of gets ignored because we just don't hear enough about him anymore. It's when I was in school, we weren't even reading this author's great works. And that's Ernest Hemingway. But this has been a project that you've been, you know, deeply involved in for some time. So tell us a little bit about the status of the Ernest Hemingway graphic novel and, you know, and any updates you can give us, any progress.
Oh, yeah, tons of progress. Yeah, this project started a long time ago with me and my co-author, Shane Fulgham. And, you know, we were dabbling in comics and we'd done a little grindhouse comic, you know, and then we decided, okay, what's really us? Who are our heroes? You know, our heroes like Superman or Batman. And really for us, our heroes were, you know, authors like Hemingway, you know, and that not only like who could write a good novel, but who also lived a very rich, adventurous life. And so we started talking about the idea of doing a comic book based on an author. And Hemingway to us was like the obvious choice because, you know, he is such a character. He has that kind of superhero aura, kind of the largesse of the image he projected. And so, yeah, we started trying to do that. And we had written an initial script based on the idea that, based on the real life account of Hemingway hunting Nazi submarines in Cuba during World War II. And at first we kind of took it as kind of like a John Rambo type film, just insert Hemingway. So it was kind of very schlocky and action oriented and just kind of really over the top. And we had an artist in mind to do that, and it didn't work out initially, and so that we were kind of put the project on hiatus while we were trying to find the perfect person to work with us. And finally we made that connection with Milenko Shimich.
I'm glad you pronounced that, because I was gonna look at it and be like, nope.
Yeah, I saw something that he was a classically trained fine artist that was wanting to do comic books, and he said he wanted something historically based. And I sent him the script, and for me, that was really kind of the launching off part of the project, because beyond just being an artist, he kind of became a third person to kind of look at the story. And we kind of backed off and kind of from our initial approach and rewrote it with, more heart, more sentiment. And that was like the perfect way to go. And even though, I'm hammering a sixth revision of a script, something that I'd written years before, it was kind of frustrating at times. But in the end, it's one of those things that kind of inspires you forward. And yeah, so we got involved in the project. He is churning out art. We're currently working on lettering, which we're going to try to do traditional hand inked lettering. We had done some composite tests with digital lettering, which I've done a lot of before, but it didn't really work because of his he's doing a traditional style with inks and watercolors. So kind of, we wanted to go back and try to like do some traditional hand lettering. So that's kind of where we're at now. We're really excited that the project's going to be featured in a book coming out from Kent State Press called Hemingway and Comics. So kind of like detailing all the appearances of Hemingway as a comic book character, not just here in the United States, but also around the world, because in certain places like Italy, he was even more of a big name character. So yeah, we're excited for that and excited to continue on this project.
Let's talk briefly, if you may. Obviously, Hemingway being kind of a hero to you, whereas, Batman or Spider-Man is a hero to others. But do you feel, and it's just like what you said about, how he's probably more revered in Italy than he is, anywhere else. Is it, and I'm not, this is not like an indictment of the U.S. education system, I'm sure, or public education system, I guess you're going to get specific. I'm sure, there are plenty of people out there who will do that, for any number of reasons. But Hemingway seems like he's, a lost figure in American literature. It's just not somebody that we hear a lot about or are, instructed to read a ton of, like book reports or anything like that when we're, in high school or college, or at least in my experience.
He kind of is what he is. And in many ways, he's a product of his particular generation. And yeah, I don't know why someone would choose to not or to read it, but I personally, I wasn't like a big reader of Hemingway. It was mainly my co-author Shane, who's the most literate guy I know. He's kind of passing on these books to me. And like when I got involved in doing this project, of course it meant going back and reading his stuff, because yeah, I'd read Old Man and the Sea in high school or something like that, but I hadn't really looked at it beyond that. So yeah, it was, in doing this project, it was kind of me getting to know Hemingway as well, and his works. And one of the things that I kind of really like about what we're doing is kind of like trying to do an homage to him in the story itself and in the narrative, but also for people who are Hemingway readers or fans. There are a lot of, term Easter eggs, but nods, to this book or that. So that's really a cool part of it.
Well, now I got to know, why don't you like the term Easter eggs?
I don't know. I think it's just silly.
It is kind of random how that was chosen. I guess it's because, traditionally at Easter, for those who celebrate, you go in search of Easter eggs and you find them, and it's, it's a little prize. But I think, you know, as much as you could use Easter egg in a reference, you know, like how many Easter eggs did they cram in this 2.5 minute trailer? You know, you could nod or homage or, you know, hidden images or, you know, if you really want to do, I don't know if you can hear, can you hear that screaming in the background?
Yeah.
That's my son. I just,
excitement.
Right. You know, it's Christmas time. He's all geeked up on sugar. But you know this, and I think most of the listeners know this, that usually when we record Nerds United, it's after he's in bed. So it's 4:30 on a Sunday. So he's, wound for sound. But, I think the ultimate Easter egg, I'm not saying it needs to be anywhere in the Hemingway, book, but anywhere would be putting a little Waldo somewhere in the background. That's an Easter egg. That's a nod. That's a hidden gem, for some, but,
well, not Easter eggs, but like the current term, I guess, is, fan service.
There so, you yeah. go.
Yeah. There's a lot of Hemingway, quote unquote, fan service in this book. I hope it's the right amount. And it's, you know, it's, I kind of like the subtle things, not like too over your nose.
I like it, you know, because I'm not, you know, as I mentioned, the American public education system failed me, and I don't know that much about Hemingway's life or career for that matter. So I'm anxious to get my hands on the book just to learn. You know, and it's got to be more engaging, more interesting than, you know, sitting in and reading, you know, a textbook about it. Or, you know, I don't trust Wikipedia for a lot of reasons. But I also kind of distrusting about the internet in general. But that's a story and a conspiracy for another day.
Well, like for our book, it's kind of goes with the, like, you know, the whole Quentin Tarantino Once Upon a Time thing where, you know, you could take something and deal with it historically, but it may not be as exactly happened. So for the official history, Hemingway never did run across a fully armed and operational U-boat. For the sake of our story, he did. And it's kind of that was one of the things about it, was like, OK, in my mind, he's out there hunting U-boats. What would have happened had he actually come across one? And so, but while at the same time we're like kind of treating this as kind of like a what if alternative history, we are like doing our due diligence to try to get everything historically accurate as possible, which is a lot of work to do, but it's kind of important for me because it has to be grounded in reality.
Well, I can't wait for the graphic novel, the rights of it to be picked up by Disney. I don't know if you know this about Disney, but they like to take a lot of things and you know, a lot of moments or stories, slap that based on a true story, you know, disclaimer at the bottom, and then change a lot of things. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Rudy, the classic underdog tale. But Rudy didn't have an older brother who was, you know, kind of picking on him and telling him he can't do it. That was all fabricated. That was for drama. And Remember the Titans, another Disney football movie. There was not as many racial tensions in that school because they'd already been desegregated for a couple of years before Coach Boone, Herman Boone, Denzel Washington's character took over. So. And, you know, they make up a lot of stuff. I'm just saying. Disney not always factually accurate. And they make a lot of money, too. So,
well, Disney, if you're listening, despite myself, I'm going to say the rights to Hemingway are available, but I would most, beyond that, really love to do an Epcot comic book. So,
ooh.
Hit me up.
well, we're in a period of segues here, so... Do you have the Disney Plus? Have you been watching the Imagineering documentary?
Yeah, we just finished that the other day. I felt foolish because I'd watched just like the first episode of that and thought it was like a self-contained little documentary. I was like, oh, that's cool. And then the other day I was flipping through. I was like, oh, wait, there's like seven more episodes of this. Yeah, so yeah, we watched that through. And as like a Disney geek or... let's say former Disney geek, I really did enjoy that.
That's some great stuff. And speaking of another Disney quote unquote property, and another segue from Hemingway, and is that you and Milenko
Yeah.
Also, we're doing during Inktober. We're working on a Star Wars comic, right? Tell us about that.
Yeah. He was wanting to do an Inktober, and we kind of tossed around a few ideas. He wanted to do like an old fashioned newspaper style serial comic where each day of October that would be a panel, and we put them together in weeklies in that. And we tossed around a few ideas of like more historical based stuff, and ultimately it was like we're already like up to our noses on Hemingway, so let's just kind of like use this as a chance to take a break and do something fun. So we did like a very quite unofficial fan comic based on Star Wars, and yeah, we chose to do something on Obi-Wan, and that was, you know, as a kid that grew up acting out my own adventures with those figures and stuff, it was really neat to kind of to work on something like that.
It's as you mentioned, kind of jokingly, they're not canon. where would somebody be able to find this if they wanted to, you know, seek this out and you know, just have fun reading just a little side story in the Star Wars universe?
Yeah, I would just encourage folks to follow Milyenko on Instagram. I think that's and I'll pull it up here in a minute what he's at. But yeah, you could check that out as far as that goes, and also beyond that, what we're doing with Hemingway and just all the random cool stuff that he always tends to draw. So yeah, definitely.
And I will for the listeners out there, I will post the first page, the first week, if you will, of the Star Wars story on this attached to this post on jitterymonkey.com, so you can check that out and get that first taste, and then I'll have Milyenko's Instagram readily available for people to check out. A lot of his stuff's just really good. I mean, he's got some celebrity portraits here as well. You know, just check that out. A very talented artist. Star Wars. I don't know if you know this or not, Anthony, but there's a little movie in theaters presently with the Star Wars title.
Yeah, talking about it.
Now, no spoilers here, because I haven't seen the movie. And I don't think you've seen the movie.
No, I'm spoiled, but I've not seen it yet.
Maybe by Christmas 2020, I'll have seen Rise of Skywalker. We talked briefly about it on the last episode of Nerds United. Two of our guests had seen the movie. Got thumbs up from both of them. One individual who's a bit more on the cynical side said, yes, Chad, I'm talking about you. Said he went and saw it twice in one day, if that's any indication. What I guess maybe your overall thoughts on the saga coming to an end.
I'm unfortunately, I have to be on the side that's not been a huge fan of the Disney trilogy. So that said, I've been watching the prequels actually on Disney Plus, and I haven't revisited those in a while. And I don't know if it's the rose-colored glasses or, you know, nostalgia or what, but those are surprisingly interesting to me as someone who'd kind of written them off at the time. So I don't know. Give me 10 years, maybe I'll come around to the Disney trilogy.
Nothing wrong with that. I think, you know, a lot of it, I think a lot of this franchise has been carried by nostalgia. And I'm not saying that is bad, but, you know, the young kids who were 6, 7, 8, 9 years old when A New Hope came out, or as it was called at the time, Star Wars, you know, they've kind of been along for the ride ever since, and that's really bolstered, you know, its popularity. I don't think if those the maybe 20, 25 year olds, I'm not that old at the time, so I don't know, but I just don't know if it's not bolstered by those kids, you know, who were kids in the late 70s. I don't know if it survives this long, you know?
Right. You know, for better or worse, Star Wars, I mean, I wouldn't even like classify it as pop culture, but really it's become a cultural thing, you know, for people now into three generations. It's just kind of interesting to me, like when I talk to people that grew up in my era that were raised on the original trilogy, and then, you know, we have our certain thoughts, and then you meet the next generation that grew up as the prequel trilogy. That was their trilogy. And, you know, it's interesting, but I look back on, you know, why I liked Star Wars as a kid, and yeah, there was cool ships and cool aliens and stuff like that. But I think what beyond that really resonated with me was this, you know, this hopefulness of it, you know, that good could triumph over evil, that, you know, like Luke not wanting to give up on his father and redeem him in the end. And, you know, there was something very satisfactory in that, and that, you know, Lucas was playing with a lot of those old archetypes, you know, the hero's journey and stuff. And there's a satisfaction in that, and there's a resonance in that. And so, you know, when I hit like The Last Jedi and stuff, where Luke's just so cynical and stuff, and, you know, it just kind of, you know, I think that's when it lost me more than Leia flying through outer space. And I guess that's just kind of where I stand on that.
Speaking of the hero's journey in Star Wars and Disney Plus, what's your thought on The Mandalorian?
Oh, I obviously love that. No, I think it's really good. You know, it kind of had a little soft kind of meanderings there for a bit, but they're kind of pulling it together, and I'm super eager to see what happens on this final episode. And yeah, I've got my hopes and stuff, but we'll see how it all pans out.
Well, there's no easy transition for this one, but it is Christmas. And yeah. I like reminding people every year of certain Christmas songs that they may have forgotten about, it, or maybe didn't know that they were sung by certain people. Are you familiar, Anthony, with a little band from the 90s? They had a couple hits by the name of Stone Temple Pilots.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And the frontman, Scott Weiland.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that in a different setting, in a different time, well, Scott could be quite the crooner? Were you aware of such a thing?
No, not at all.
So I'm going to play a clip for you here.
Yeah.
And I hope I'm going to blow your mind. If you can hear it, which is, you know, altogether a different story. So, can you hear that all right?
Yeah.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening in the lane? Snow is glistening, a beautiful sight. We're happy tonight, walking in the winter wonderland.
Gone away. It is very much a man out of time. He really was onto something there with his, I don't know if this was with drugs or without drugs, but I just like bringing it up every year that Scott Weiland could have been part of the Rat Pack.
What is that from?
That's just it's on YouTube. It's just it's a music video. It's actually on the Stone Temple Pilots YouTube, Vivo, whatever you want to call it, page, and it just says Scott Weiland Winter Wonderland. And he does I'll Be Home for Christmas. I think he put out an entire album.
Is he still with us?
No, he passed.
With the Mandela effect, you can never be sure. No, that's it. That's interesting. I had no idea that he did that album.
So another one, you may or may not be aware. I just like saying this. Twisted Sister, I'm sure you're familiar.
Yeah, with the one song, of course, yeah.
But they also put out a Christmas album. Are you prepared?
Yep. I am ready.
And by the way, the video is as outrageous as you would imagine. It's Dee Snider in full Twisted Sister. And he's... It's got everything for everybody. It's got the holidays, and it's got 80s hair band. She's, you know, she's covering her ears at the beginning, and at the end, she looks like she's dancing on a pole. It's ridiculous. It's Christmas. It's Twisted Sister. And I think their album is actually called Twisted Sister Christmas. But is there any random Christmas songs or anything Yuletide that is random that perhaps you'd like to share with the class?
I mean, I grew up without Christmas. I was raised a Jehovah's Witness, so Christmas came to me like late in life. So I don't have like really like, you know, deep down sentimental roots to that. Well, that being said, I love Karen Carpenter and Carpenter's Christmas album. So yeah, I always got to tear up for Merry Christmas, Darling, and Judy Garland, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
One of the classics. If you don't mind me asking, this is borderline personal. I don't know if it's realization, but as you mentioned, you know, Christmas coming to you late in life, what is that? I don't know if revelation is the right word, but what is that feeling like? If you can walk the listeners through, you know, when you're like, oh, this is what everybody else is doing at the end of December.
Oh, I don't know. It's like anything else. When you're raised in a certain culture, no matter what it is, everyone's got their cultural things. It just happened that I was raised without that, and so I mean. I knew of Christmas movies, so I wasn't like, oh, what are they doing in there with those trees and stuff like that. And I guess like anybody, I drove around and said, oh, wow, I really like the lights. They're pretty. But, yeah, it was like when I got out of the church like over a decade ago, I didn't rush to celebrate it. But now, and you know, you get in like new family situations and stuff where they do you – you just kind of become an unofficial part of it. And it's kind of weird to me. Like, we hung stockings up the other day, and I started to try to stuff them with stuff. And they're like, oh, no, you're not supposed to do that until the day before. And so I feel like I'm still learning.
These little subtle intricacies, like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Yeah.
You know, it's comical or ironic or coincidental. We're talking about it. But, you know. Like in the movie A Christmas Story, which, by the way, I don't know if you know, 24 hours of it on TBS as this drops, it's probably on right now. But there's that slight breach in protocol because nobody told you the protocol, Anthony.
Yeah, exactly. I'm still learning. That said, you know, like last Christmas we had celebrated with my wife Andrea's family, and it was like right before her grandmother passed, and that was like grandmother's last Christmas, and all the family coming there and rallying around. And it's like, I got it. I understood finally what it all meant. Well, and so that was kind of nice to be able to experience that.
Are there any, this is a safe space. Are there any Christmas related questions you'd like to ask me a lifelonger that maybe, you know, be like, When you go to your Christmas gathering later today, because again, this is Christmas, we're talking right now Christmas, that you can drop this little Christmas bombshell, like this Christmas nugget, this little Christmas fact, and be like, and seem smarter because you were on Nerds United.
No, I think I think I'm good. Like, you know, if there's any faux pas or whatever, I'll muddle my way through.
What you're saying is, sorry, Greg, you're of no help to me.
we're just really into making our own traditions, you know. So that's always kind of the weird mesh up when you get around different kind of people. Sure. And stuff. You know, you just kind of take what everybody brings to the picture, and you just kind of make it good go. Because, you know, beyond all that, the important thing is just, you know, being with people, being with community, being with family. You know, being with someone in your life that gives a damn, and I hope everybody's got that.
You know, I can't. I was going to ask you another question, but That's about the best way I can think of to wrap up this podcast. Well done.
All right. And the snowflakes fall and, you know, the angels come up. And
I'll be honest with you. I'm about sick to death of snowflakes. If I don't – and it's 2019. I have to specify. I'm talking about the wintry precipitation. I just want to get that out there. Because everybody's a snowflake now. It, you know. Anyway, I should cut that out. I'm not going to. I don't do that much post-production. But you summed it up the best. Spend some time. Get together in family or friends, community. Like you said, someone who gives a damn. And Anthony, I want to express my gratitude to you for joining me on this episode of Nerds United, and wish you and yours the very happiest of holidays.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Greg.
And we do end this podcast a new way. And in the vein of the 1980s and 90s video rental stores, I will say the first part. I'm going to let you take it from there. But to everybody out there, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Mike's going to be back with me the end of this week. If you have questions for Nerds United, submit them on Facebook and Twitter. And be kind, Anthony.
Rewind. There we go.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.